All right, everybody, good afternoon. Welcome to another Top Show. Hopefully you get a lot out of this one, because this one I think is really interesting, and it's kind of one that I use all the time, like literally every day, because it happens to me every day and it happens to you every day. And here's how maybe you could apply it to your life or business or sales or whatever. So today, what I'm calling it is everyday stories and how you can use those in your business, life, sales, marketing, and whatever. So I'm Bill Davis, and say hi to Mark.
Hi to Mark.
And I think we'll just get started. So, and I'm going to try to be brief, but
emphasis on the word try.
Yeah.
So it's Friday. I'm a smart ass on Fridays. Okay.
You couldn't see the bold italics, but yeah, try was bold and italics.
Or air quotes.
They're Trump quotes. I never said that.
Hey, this is a political free zone here.
No, it's not. So every day I write an email to my subscribers, and almost every day that letter, that note, email, whatever, comes from something that either happened to me that morning or the day before, or, you know, usually within the last 24 to 36 hours, something happened that caused me to think of a story or to share the story to convey a point. So, that's kind of how all of those work. And if you've been a subscriber of mine for any length of time, you know that I lead kind of a weird life. Mark, can you attest to that?
Yes, I can.
Good.
But so it's weird good as opposed to just weird.
Yeah, true. It's just weird. I mean, I've been told that I'm, and I think you actually started this, but other people have told me this too, that I should like write a book about my life because it would be a lot like Jim Gaffigan, who I love. And I didn't even like the guy as a comedian until he started talking about his family. And then it was like, oh my God, this is so funny.
Yeah, I mean, I definitely see that comparison. And you know, a lot of things are about family life with him and kids and you know, still food because he loves to eat. But yeah, I definitely see the similarities.
So, today I wanted to talk about the cough drop story, and this is the story that has evolved over this week. It started on Tuesday. So long story short, I'm up here in Washington with my oldest son. The rest of my family's in California. They're all going to move up here in December when we fly down, the two of us, and we all drive back up. That will be fun.
But that's another story.
You're about that too. But this story really is, it happened this week. And I caught a cold, came with a bad cough. Liam caught a cold, came with a bad cough. All of the symptoms of the cold leave, except for the bad cough, and they linger for a week or two, if not longer. So Liam's been having this horrible cough. So on Tuesday, I think it was Tuesday, it could have been Monday, I took him to school and I got this bright idea because I'm smart like this. I'm not a very good single parent, by the way. I thought, hey, Liam, why don't I go to the store and buy you some cough drops and I'll bring them back to school. I'll have them call you to the office and I'll give you the cough drops and you can, you know, take cough drops whenever you need. Seemed like a great idea to me. So fast forward, I go to the store, buy cough drops. I come back to the school and they say, oh, no. You have to talk to the nurse. Okay. So I talk to the nurse and he says, you have to have a doctor's note to administer cough drops. I'm like, what? This is like, and I said this is like the dumbest thing I've ever heard because I know how to, you know, make friends and influence people and stuff like that. So I said innocently enough, why? And he said, it's a state law. And I said, can you show me where that law is online so I can look it up? And he says, yeah. And he goes into his office and I'm watching over his shoulder and he's typing in. He types in like 2 to 3 searches and he can't find it. And he gets frustrated. He stands up and he says, I'm not losing my license over this. You go Google it. So I'm like, okay.
What license?
His nursing license or whatever. I don't know.
Really? Wow, over a cough drop.
Yeah, because you find out later that this is like a controlled substance in the schools. and you can be not only suspended, but apparently, at least according to some of the employees there, arrested for having a cough drop on your possession.
I've seen too many prison movies because I have this image of like going out behind the back of the school and a guy selling or exchanging cough drops to other kids. Like, you know, it would be a drug deal, except it's cough like, drops.
You know, in prison they trade, you know, cigarettes and whatnot. Cough drops. So I go home and I look this thing up and I can't find it. I literally can't find anything about this. There are like stories from ancillary sites, like i.e. not affiliated with a school, the school district, or the state, but just like parent sites and stuff like that. And they're saying, yeah, it's against the law and you got to do this and blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, oh my God. So anyway, I call the school district yesterday, and they refer me to the district nurse, who of course doesn't answer the phone. And now I'm getting mad. I'm posting on Facebook what I'm going to do. And, you know, I'm going to take this all the way up the flagpole if I have to. And, you know, I'm getting, you know, my friends are egging me on. She calls me today and says, that's not true. It is a state law. I still don't think it is because I can't find it anywhere. But she says it's a state law, but they gave the school districts latitude to amend or modify how that works in each particular school or district. And so I got her assurance that, yes, I could send my child to school with cough drops. He wouldn't be arrested and shackled and stuff like that. But I was prepared to go to the school board and then the state and then just and explain to them. I moved from California, which is the nanny state. I moved here in small part to get away from that crap. And you aren't even letting kids have a cough drop. And furthermore, so I left out part of the story. So Liam goes to school yesterday with cough drops, because I didn't know yet that he couldn't have them on his person. I thought he just had to have a doctor's note. So we went to the doctor, got a note. It says he can have cough drops. He went to school. He went to his first grade or his first period class. And the teacher there said, you have to take the cough drops to the nurse's office and they have to administer them to you when you need them. And I thought, really? A kid who needs cough drops every 10 to 20 minutes, you're going to give him a hall pass 48 times a day. Really? You're going to do that? That's preposterous. Anyway, found out none of that stuff was true. Anyway, 2 points I want to make about this. No, well, 3 points. Number one, I could use that story in marketing easily. But the thing that bugs me about these kinds of stories is how people hear something and they don't really know the source. They don't check it out. They just go, okay, that's the policy. And that pisses me off. I see it all the time in marketing. I see it all the time in sales. Dude, I can't take this back. I can't take this back in a return because it's against company policy or store policy, right? I think that crap is for the weak. I think it's for people who can't think for themselves, you know, hide behind the policy rather than put somebody in charge who actually can fucking interpret stuff. The buck doesn't stop here. And I've been in the situation before where you ask, well, who's your boss? Who signs your paycheck, buddy? And they're like, Nobody. I do. Well, then the buck does stop with you. So what's your decision? Well, it's policy. Well, who makes that policy? You know what I'm saying? Anyway, the other point about this is, you know, I'm not sure I demonstrated that I was problem solving here, but in the end, I got what I wanted. I got what we needed, and I didn't have to run it up the flagpole, and I didn't have to get like unreasonable until I had to get unreasonable. So anyway, I just wanted to share that. It's kind of rantish, but it, I think it's an example of how you can use a story to illustrate funny stuff, useful stuff, things that are relevant to your audience. I'm sure we've all been in this kind of goofy predicament before where somebody tells you, no, man, it's policy. It's not my policy. It's their policy, but I work for them. So that's what I have to do. And it's, you know, I can't do anything about that. Sorry, man. Anyway, Mark, what do you have anything to add to my story or to the idea of storytelling in everyday life?
Yeah. Well, first of all, you know, let's put some context around stories. I mean, you know, going back to cavemen, you know, drawing on cave walls, that's a story. You know, we grow up with stories. We are told stories, you know, as children. And stories have a way of establishing a level of engagement and connection where just delivering what I'd like to call data, you know, information doesn't. You know, the question is, how can we use them for our best advantage? And, you know, I think you made a good case for there isn't necessarily one type of story. There are multiple types of stories. I mean, there are stories, but the key is that you've got to, you know, particularly in marketing, you've got to connect that story to, you know, another point, because otherwise, you know, you're just kind of rambling and ranting, and people may be able to, you know, say, oh man, that's, you know, that's tough and I feel for you. But is that, you know, is that really the outcome that you want? So that's one point. The second point is, you know, you mentioned in your emails that a lot of times what you write is what happens to you kind of that day or very recently. And I would just encourage people to create a story archive. You know, do like a little notebook or something, or, you know, Bill, I know you like to use OneNote or Evernote. And as these things happen, don't try to figure out, well, how do I relate this to marketing? Just, you know, just put it in there, because, you know, assuming that you're actually getting out in the world, you're going to continue to have stories. You're going to continue to have interactions. Some may work, some may not. And, you know, this is such an interesting topic. I think in future calls, I actually developed a story architecture, to the point of, the 9 universal laws of story. So there are certain criteria that stories have to, you know, to really kind of break through, you know, there are certain marks that you would want to hit, but, I love stories, and I think, you know, I mean, look at comedians. Their whole act is story. You know, it's like, hey, this happened to me. Have you ever noticed this? You know, it's either first person story or commentary. So so that's some initial feedback, and also kind of story structure. You know, I'm sure, Bill, if you had to go up, you know, we're kind of presenting here, but let's say you actually, I know you do live events. Let's say you had to go up and do a live event and you wanted to use this story. My guess is you would be able to kind of look at it, refine it, and say, okay, I'm breaking the story down into segments. You know, because you said problem solution. So that may be one takeaway. There's probably multiple takeaways, you know, external, internal, you know, and you can use those as jumping off points to, you know, to make your point. So, and have fun. I mean, I probably have 3 or 4 different books on storytelling, story writing. You know, maybe what we can do is share some good resources. You know, I have a book, 20 Master Plots, which is basically every movie has one of these plots, and you'll discover you can match any movie to one of these plots. So there's a lot of layers to story, and obviously there's ways we can apply that to our marketing.
Yeah, I think the interesting thing is, you know, how do you, you know, if we're trying to sell something or market a good or service, and we do that primarily through whether it's social media or, you know, the written word or even the spoken word, how do you weave the story into the offer? Or do you start with the offer and try to weave a story around it? Or do you start with a story and have a bunch of offers that you could plug into it? I think that's an interesting thing. And I think I don't think there's a one solid answer. I think there's multiple answers. But, you know, it's interesting how people approach this. And I think from what I've seen, a lot of, you know, quote unquote marketers don't do stories well. They don't really try to weave them into their pitch. And I guess at the end of the day, you know, if you're successful, you're successful. But I think you could be more successful if you weave stories into what you're trying to market. Because if nothing else, if people are interested in the offer, they still might be interested in the story. And they'll remember you next time they see your email address, you know, your name show up in their inbox, or, you know, one of your goofy subject lines or something like that. They'll remember you. And one of the keys to marketing is always being top of mind, you know. So I think it helps. I think it helps a lot. And you should try it. If you're not weaving stories into what it is you do, try it and see if it works.
Good advice.
So Justin says Bill's face looks concerned, like I'm going to say something.
you were saying something. So I don't know. Maybe there's a time lag. Well, you know, I think stories, you know, I mean, they can work with, like you said, with or without an offer. I will tell you one thing. They have to be authentic, or if they're not authentic, you know, you have to give credit. So if you don't pass off a story that experienced you personally, if it was actually someone else. And I was actually reminded of this. I don't know if, you know, Bill, I know you and I have a lot of the same Facebook friends, but one of my Facebook friends mentioned that with this, you know, this hashtag Me Too about, you know, assault and violence against women, that this woman had two friends, and one friend had actually co-opted the exact same story and experience of the other friend. So, you know, I'm not sure what was going on there. And the point is not to, you know, psychoanalyze. The point is, if you're going to do a story, you know, make sure it's authentic. Or if it's, you know, here's another thing too. If you read any, you know, I'm reading a book now. It's more of a self development book, but it's all about stories from history. And it's almost like the Paul Harvey, you know, here's the rest of the story, where you may have heard something, but you didn't hear the whole thing, or you didn't know how it turned out. So, you know, if you're planning on writing a book, you know, historical stories are going to definitely play, you know, a major role.
Yeah, and think about that. I mean, books about history, right? I mean, I know there are people who love history. I'm not one of them. My mom loved history. She would read and read and read about things, you know, from our nation's history, from the world history. She loved that stuff, but everything I saw her read was story-based. Imagine going back to school and getting a history textbook and reading that drivel. It's basically facts and figures, and this is what happened, and it's kind of chronological. And
yeah, it doesn't really.
No wonder students hate history, because it's not a story. It's boring. But if you read something that's, you know, like an actual book that sells well on the New York Times bestseller list, that's history based. It could be fact. It could be fiction, or you know, but as long as it's a story, it's going to be, it has a chance of being interesting.
Can I give you a real quick one?
Yeah.
And maybe this is a nice way to wrap up, because I know we're kind of running out of time. There's a book. It is extremely deep, and because there's a lot in it, it's called A Brief History of Everything. And the title is a little sarcastic. The author's name is Ken Wilber. And yet, you know, I read a lot of books, but I remember this one point of history, and his, and it was the way he framed it. He started with, do you know how men and women first separated in the workplace, or separated in terms of what they did for work? And so by starting the story that way, what I learned was, going back to agrarian societies where basically they're farming, they would actually farm with sticks, and men and women were pretty much using the same implements. They're both using sticks. With the invention of the plow required more physical strength. So the men started using the plow, and then the women were like, well, okay, he's got that, so now what are we gonna do? So they kind of transitioned to be more of the, you know, the family caretaker and taking care of the children and stuff. Who knew? I mean, did you know that? I had no idea that that's kind of how it all started.
No, and quite honestly, I never thought of that. Yeah, that's interesting. That's extremely interesting, and that would be much better told in a story than men use tools, women don't. I mean, okay. men
of course now the tools. The definition of getting plowed has different contexts.
You went there. Hey, but at least this week we didn't have a golden shower story. So there you go.
Okay. All right.
I think we're about to wrap. Hopefully you guys all have a nice Friday and a nice weekend. It's raining here. It's raining here for the next, I don't know, 40 days. I think there's something going on. But I am in the Pacific Northwest, so I should have known, and I do. But have a great weekend, and thanks for showing up, and we'll talk to you next Friday, 2:00 Pacific. See you later.
Bye.